The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and we're just 2 days away from the biggest podcast ever. Mick Foley will finally be here on TIJ on Friday. The long wait is over, but today, one other show before Mick gets here, and this is another tremendous guest, a master illusionist and magician who's done some daring demonstrations involving levitations, water tanks, and straitjackets. He's also a huge KISS fan, got his start thanks to the WWE. Great story, you'll hear all about it. Plus, we have an amazing personal story where I almost messed up one of his great stunts. Of course, I'm talking about Chris Angel, the star and creator of the Mind Freak live show at the Luxor in Las Vegas, and it is incredible. You got to go check it out if you haven't seen it. It's a spinoff of his popular A&E TV show, Mind Freak. He does some tremendous crazy stunts, demonstrations, as he calls them. He puts his life at risk every day during his live show. I saw it with my own two eyes, and you'll hear him talk about things that have gone wrong, times when he almost died, like what happened to him last Friday night when his upside-down escape from the straitjacket went horribly wrong and abruptly ended that show. Chris was rushed to the hospital but released that night and was back on stage doing that stunt the very next day. That's Chris Angel for you. The show must go on. Now, this interview was recorded before last weekend's failed demonstration, but you hear Chris talk about this particular straitjacket stunt in great detail and why it's so difficult and why, even though he's performed it thousands of times, it can still go horribly wrong, okay? He's going to take us inside his 60,000-square-foot laboratory where he works on new demonstrations and magic tricks for his show every week. So, this is a good one. Chris Angel bringing his illusions, levitations, and crazy stunts to Talk is Jericho. He is the Mind Freak, and he's here today. Thanks in part to the great sponsors let me do this podcast for you for twice a week for free, including a sponsor who's literally both saved my wrestling and singing careers, talking about Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga. And now, because Dallas wants all of you to live the healthiest life you can, just like me, and be the best you can be, just like me, he's offering all of you, the Sexy Beast listeners of Talk is Jericho, 30% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all DDPY-related merch. I'm not kidding, 30% off, okay? And all you got to do is go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Dallas is calling this the Hall of Fame sale because, as you know, he's about to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, so he's celebrating this huge occasion with a great deal for you. You guys have heard me talk about what DDP Yoga's done for me, and you're going to hear it again when the new Fozzy album comes out very soon. You're going to hear it in my singing. Singing is all based around the core, just like doing the workout, and DDP Yoga has helped strengthen my core all across the board. So you're going to hear what DDP Yoga's done for Mick Foley as well. This Friday on the biggest podcast ever, with all the wars Mick has been through. Mick is still having some issues with his hips and his body. We'll talk all about that, but Mick has dropped over 100 pounds due to DDPY and is in the best shape of his life. And DDPY can do just the same for you, man. And I do DDPY everywhere and anywhere. Just open up the app and get to work wherever I am, backstage at a venue, in my hotel room. The app makes it easy, and it's got a whole new set of workouts in it, so you'll never get bored. The app's also got tips for healthy eating, recipes to keep you on target. It's everything you need to live a healthier life. And like I said, you can now get 30% off all the DDP Yoga Now app and all related merch at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. 30% off all DDPY swag, hats, check, t-shirts, check, yoga mats, how you doing, heart monitors, how you doing, so much more. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. It's the biggest sale ever on the DDPY program, so take advantage of it. Celebrate Dallas's induction into the WWE Hall of Fame and get on the path to healthier living at the same time. Just go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. That's ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Change your life today. Get in the best shape of your life physically and mentally and do it now.
Talk is Jericho.
Backstage here at the Luxor at the Chris Angel Theater with Chris Angel. And this is funny because we've kind of been talking a little bit about how we've met before. You're kind of a little bit foggy about it, so let me tell you a couple things. So I first met you when you were working at the WWE New York restaurant bar. You were working there, correct?
Yes, I started in 2001. The McMahons gave me my break, and I'm very grateful and humbled by their chance on me.
And what was your job there?
Well, I went down there because I was looking for a location because I was so sick and tired of being rejected by, you know, the credible people in on Broadway and in New York. I kept on knocking on doors for so many years, and I basically said, you know what, these people don't get it. They're going to get it once I show them what it is I wanted to do, because they were always looking for something that was like somebody else, and I wasn't like anything out, and I was kind of like doing my own thing. So I basically financed by mortgaging my mom's house, taking a business loan for $50,000, and took $360,000 on a loan for the house, and basically put a show together, Mind Freak, on Broadway. And I was looking for a location, and I thought the best location was Times Square. The McMahons had the WWF at the time.
Yeah, WWF New York.
Yeah, and then it changed to WWE. And I went down there and I convinced them to essentially let me use this room, which was a banquet room, which held about 145 people, which was just the storage room. And I put a 10-foot by 12-foot stage that was 9 inches off the ground in the center, had three sides surrounding me. And I put this little show called Mind Freak on. And it was the start. I was supposed to be there for 12 weeks. I ended up being there for 14 months. And it did amazing. It got me my first television special. And, the McMahons, really gave me that opportunity. And they explored a lot of different things with me. And I'm very indebted to them. They were amazing people. They still are today. I have a great relationship with them. And, it's just crazy. They put me in their magazine. They put me on their TV Raw. They put me on all these shows. Mm-hmm. Because I was unknown. I had long hair down on my thigh.
Very long hair.
And I was completely unknown, and I just knew what I wanted to do, and worked my ass off, and got that little bit of a break. But I was scared because, I had this crazy loan out, and I didn't even make $30,000 a year then. My expenses, because it was a local one union, we had to have union people there and stuff. I had to make $30,000 a week in order just to cover my expenses. So it was a really scary time. People thought my mom was crazy to let me finance or take a mortgage out in the house, but this is after 9/11, so the whole city was dead, but I don't know, I just really wanted to do it, and I was sick and tired of being rejected, and I said, I'm going to create my own road and I'll follow somebody else's.
Okay, so here's the funny thing. So I have two stories about us, and the first one was around that time. So my band Fozzy played at WWE New York. We played there a couple times. And the first time we played there, you were there. And you're like, hey, I'm working in, there was kind of an executive room or something like that.
It was the banquet room.
The banquet room, yeah. I'm working in the banquet room. I'm doing, tricks. I'm doing tricks.
I was doing 10, 12 shows a week.
Yeah, illusions and tricks and all that stuff. So you came up to our dressing room.
Right.
And you're like, hey, man, whatever you said. I remember two things. One, you gave me your card because you said if you ever need any stage wear made,
yeah,
I make it.
Right.
I'll make it for right.
That's true.
To make your
That's
own
true.
Stuff.
I still do.
Do you still do?
I have a 60,000 square foot facility now, but yes, I still am there in the trenches.
Okay, so here's the thing. So you sat down and said, okay, pick a fork off of this tray. And there was a tray of 20 forks. And I picked one randomly. There was no chicanery. I picked one. And you sat in front of me and you bent the fork. Now, my guitar player who still plays with me on the right, drummer who still plays on the left, and they were like, dude, don't you see what he's doing? And I was like, he's bending the fork. They could see the illusion from the angle they're at.
I see.
But sitting face to face with you,
right,
you bent this fork in half and blew my fucking mind. That was one of your big tricks.
Oh,
at the time.
Awesome! Yeah,
yeah. And I still don't know what you did to. But they were like, "Dude, we saw it." And I was like, "I never saw it. I thought you were like,
right.
Oh my gosh, this guy's like a wizard."
Right. Well, yeah, a wizard for you, but not for them.
Right?
You know, that's the thing about magic. You know, and that's the challenge of me doing Mind Freak Live here at the Luxor. It's like, you know, I go in the audience, I appear in the audience, I fly around, I do close up magic, and it's all about angles and different things. But you know, I was trying to obviously impress you because, you know, I was very much looking to utilize relationships and network and get to be friendly with people that were good people that saw my potential and would give me that credibility to take me to the next level. And mm-hmm. you definitely were somebody that, you know, and still are, you know, our fixture in the WWE family. And, you know, I have great respect for the athletes that,
right.
that have worked and continue to work. And especially having been 17 years in the WWE, that's a testament to you because that's not easy, man. I know what you go through physically, you know, just what your bodies endure. And that's just, you know, the fans don't realize like how your body hurts every day, you know, and like how
sure.
you still go out there and you still, you know, go out there and you entertain and you're doing these incredibly physically demanding feats and you're not 20 years old. You know, I'm 48, man. I know what it feels like to get
that
older and still have to do
ago,
that.
Yeah. So here's the other one too. Now, this is a funny one. You kind of mentioned it when we were talking earlier. So I can't remember exactly how I saw you earlier in the day. Maybe I went by W New York, whatever, but you said, "Hey, I'm doing this stunt where I'm going to be submersed in water
that's true.
For 24 hours.
Right.
Come by and see me. Like basically come by and say hi or whatever it was. Like basically I took it as come by and like give me some support."
Sure, sure.
Because you were like at this point in time, Chris Angel was
who?
Yeah, was a nobody, right?
Exactly.
And basically so was Chris Jericho, but we always had a little connection for whatever reason.
No, you were doing well. You were doing a lot better than me, trust me, dude. People knew who you were. People had no idea who the hell I was.
So but you had your tank in the lobby of the WWE New York restaurant,
right? On Broadway and 43rd Street.
Yeah, like in the,
on the corner,
in the
right
merch
there.
Yep. Area.
In the merch, exactly.
So we had a show at the Garden, and afterwards, what are you doing tonight? What are you doing? I said, I'm going to go visit my friend Chris. He's submerged in a tank of water, and not knowing anything, you know, it's after the show. I got a piece of pizza and a thing of yogurt, and I went to the merch area, and there you are. It's like Luke Skywalker in Empire Strikes Back. You are submerged in the water.
Right.
And I'm looking at you. I remember you like had this look on you. You had the super long hair.
Yeah.
And you were kind of like, your eyes were like
so up, excuse my language,
lost in space.
It was really difficult to do because I didn't have any money at the time, so it wasn't like I had like scientists helping me do this. Like the human body's not made to endure that type of punishment, and I had to do it. If I died, I was gonna die doing this thing. And I remember a lot of support from the WWE because it was a show at the Garden.
Yes,
and a lot of people turned up to see me, and it was really it drove my adrenaline
to
see you guys and gals, the divas at the time, to come and support me. It was awesome.
So I show up, and I've got a piece of pizza and a yogurt. And I remember kind of looking like, okay, go, like, thumbs up, give me a thumbs up, Chris. And I'm taking this bite of pizza, and this guy like pushes me from behind. And I'm like, what's up? He goes, dude, you can't stand there in front of him eating. He's been in the water for 18 hours.
And I had a fast before because I couldn't use the bathroom. So I'm sitting there and it's like, you know, I'm miserable. I mean, my body's itching me because it depleted all its oil. I'm nauseous. I can't go to the bathroom. I haven't eaten in days. And I'm looking at this dude eating pizza in front of me.
You must have been kind of lost.
Honestly, I was honestly, it was honestly, the whole thing was a big blur.
Wow.
To me, because you kind of, your body goes into a different state when you're in those conditions. You know, like, as I said, you know, I jumped in a neighbor's pool for 12 hours, and that's how I tried this. And I came out and I was itching, and I thought it was the chlorine that was making my skin, you know, really irritated. But when I did this at the WWE, it was like I had to do this. And that really was one of the steps along the way that allowed me to flourish, you know, and live my dream. It was a series of small things, and that was a big break for me because at the time, you know, no one ever spent 24 hours underwater. Mm-hmm. And you know, I did this thing and I had to accomplish it. And it was in the middle of Times Square, and it was hundreds of thousands of people that walked past there every day. So it was a great opportunity for me, but I knew that I would die trying. I was not going to give up. And so, you know, WWE and all of its their stars, you know, gave me that support and that opportunity to flourish.
So how did you come up with that idea in the first place? Is that a Houdini thing?
Well, Houdini did this thing where he would be submerged in a tank for minutes and then he would escape and, you know, that would be the end of it. And I just thought, well, what if I was in there for a long period of time? You know, and then years later, another magician kind of took that idea from me and did that as well.
But, to the next level,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah. Well, he just sat in there for a few days, you know, days longer. But basically, I was the first guy to do it.
You were first.
But that was the thing, you know. I always wanted to do things that really pushed the envelope and really showed people that when the mind, body, and spirit works together, that anything is truly possible. And that really illustrated that, I guess, you know, for the day and age that I was capable of doing it, you know.
But so when you're in there. And 24 hours, like, it's funny.
The first hour I was right upside down. And then I had the whole time I had like 25 pounds of like chain and handcuffs and leg irons that I had to stay in. Because at the end, it was live on Good Morning America. And I had to escape everything and escape this tank. And I didn't know if I could do it because I never practiced it once. I didn't know what my strength level would be because I hadn't eaten for days and I was exhausted. I couldn't sleep. So it was really risky and it was live on television. So, you know, it was a lot of firsts and I took a lot of chances, but that's what you got to do, you know, in order to succeed.
But mentally, so like I'm thinking, okay, physically, like you said, okay, your body's depleted of oil. You still got your oxygen. But to me, mentally, just standing in this position or floating in this position, what do you do with your mind at that point in time?
It's all a mental game. I mean, I think that I'm a big proponent that the body is a slave to the mind, right? And I think that mental toughness is more important than physical toughness, because if you're mentally tough, then the physical will happen. If you're not tough mentally, you'll quit, you'll give up. It's why people don't live their dreams, right? It's why some people succeed in living their dream and some people talk about their dream, talk about their desires in life, talk about what they'd like, but they don't live it because they're not disciplined enough to put the sweat equity in, to put the have the passion, the perseverance, the stick-to-itiveness to accomplish something, because mentally they're not tough. And that toughness is not only to accomplish things, but it's in trying to physically do things. You know, whether you're a fighter or you're a wrestler and you want to do some move and, you know, it's dangerous, but you got focus and just be mentally tough and mentally strong to accomplish whatever you set your mind to. I firmly believe that. Mm.
So when you got pulled out of the water on Good Morning America, because I remember I watched it.
Yeah.
The next day, oh, that's my boy. How was your body depleted? Were you f***ed up?
I was pretty messed up.
Yeah.
My nose to this day, if you see it, I still have a scar underneath it. And that's from the mask wearing away at my skin.
Wow.
I went to the hospital because I was so itchy. I couldn't stop itching. And that was because my body depleted all the oils. And now if I go into a shower for more than 30 minutes, I get very, very itchy now. Seriously. And the first thing I did when I got out of there, after I went to the hospital, I went to my favorite pizzeria, which is Two Brothers on Long Island. And I had a bunch of pizza because probably subliminally,
sorry,
he screwed
man.
Up my mind, you know, and I ate a bunch of pizza.
I guess something about pizza and I don't know why.
Exactly. But yeah, that was one of, you know, I've done over 1,000 demonstrations on television, and I've done crazier things than that, but it all started from the WWE, very humble beginnings, and a dream. I didn't come from money. I didn't come from a family of entertainers, and it just goes to show you that I'm living proof that if you want something out of life and you work for it and you don't give up and it's a realistic goal, you can accomplish it.
Mm. Did the water trick, shall we say, did that help you kind of move on? Because the next thing I know, you're on Mind Freak and you're like one of the biggest guys in the country. And it wasn't too long after you had done this trick.
Well, what happened was I always knew I'd be successful because I always knew that I work harder than anybody else. And I always knew that, you know what I lack for talent, I'll make up with tenacity and learning and the desire to be a sponge, you know? And so So that opportunity really allowed me. In 2001, I opened up in October at the WWE. 2002, by myself, I landed two. I did a television special At the time, it was on the Family Channel, ABC Family, and it was a show called Mind Freak. I directed and executive producer. I sold it myself, and I shot a lot of it in the WWE and and New York City, and that was out of 13 nights of original program. That was the number one show for them. And then that led me to a sci-fi special that I did the next year, which was called Supernatural. And that was the lead-in show for Sharon Doherty's Scare Tactics, which they put all their money in that show, but we beat that show. Yeah. So it was great. And then I went to... I'm like, now people are coming to the WWE to see, because now I've had all this TV exposure and this platform, you know, and there's great reviews and stuff. And so people are coming here. Now I'm like in a little 145-seat venue. And it was kind of like disappointing to people, because they thought, like, in their mind that I was much bigger than that. So I knew that it was time, after 600 performances in this 145-seat banquet room on a 10 by 11-foot stage that's 9 inches thick, that I needed to move on. And, you know, the McMahons, spent some time, kind of talking, and we kind of discussed, you know, could we move this, you know, down a road through the WWE. But at the time, you know, it wasn't, you know, there's so much going on in WWE, you know, between pay-per-view and stuff. It wasn't something that, you know, maybe they had 100% confidence in at the time, mm-hmm. which I understand, because it took a lot of money to do it. And so I kind of went on from there, and I just kept on moving forward. But throughout the entire duration of my career, I've always kept in touch with them. They've, you know, like, Stephanie and Triple H have been to my house for dinner. Mm. We one time they got their jet got stuck here, and I flew them on my jet to New York, because they were stuck, because it was Mr. McMahon's birthday. Mm. They had to get back, and it was just a coincidence. And then they sent me a bunch of beautiful wine. They're lovely people. They're really, really wonderful people, and I'm honored to call them a friend.
I don't think people realize just how much they were involved in your early years. Like I said, like, whenever I think of you, I still think about my buddy at the bending a fork in front of me.
Yeah, right? I was, you know, the WWE, you know, I was there for 2001 till 2003, you know, and I did 600 shows there, and, you know, I was part of Raw. They had me in their magazines. I mean, they were really wonderful. They give me all these opportunities through their outlets, you know. And
did you ever do a trick for Vince?
Yeah, I think they came to actually see the show. I know Mrs. McMahon came to see the show, and you know, I've met with them in their offices, and yeah. I think in Connecticut. And Stephanie's been to the show. Her brother's been to the show. A lot of the wrestlers, and you know, they've always been. I actually did Monday Night Raw, and Mr. McMahon had me introduce a fight that he was involved with John Cena,
okay.
Who's, you know, huge, sure. you know, guy. So, like, he took care of me, you know, like, mm-hmm. and they still do. And I would do anything in the world for them. And now we work together in our fight in pediatric cancer, you know. I know that Stephanie and Triple H, you know, are very passionate about children and the epidemic. You know, one child every 2 minutes is diagnosed with cancer, and cancer is a leading cause of death among children by disease. And out of every $100 that's raised by the American Cancer Institute, less than 70 cents goes to pediatric cancer. And I know these are statistics that drive them crazy like they drive me crazy. So they were very helpful in my quest that just happened here, this event at the Luxor called Help Heal Every Life Possible. We were trying to raise $1 million, and they were really great. Paul Stanley, what an amazing human being.
Great guy.
He's the one who kind of reconnected
he
us.
He did, yeah.
And I love that man. Like, I've been such a huge KISS fan since I was a kid. And Paul Stanley, you know, is just, you know, he's a superhero that comes to life, you know?
He's a real life superhero.
Yeah, he really
is.
Especially
the guys like us.
And he, you know, went out of his way to do so many beautiful things, you know, to try to help me and this charity and to really help these kids. You know, he got Roger Daltrey's microphone signed. You know, he got money donated. He donated his own guitar. I mean, this man, people don't know, you know, like, you know, when people talk shit about him, it just drives me crazy, because people don't know, like, what a gentle soul, what a wonderful human being he is. Besides being you know, a brainiac with what he's done with the band and the music that he's created. And, you know, people talk shit, but like that guy is like in the pantheon of great celebrities that are just beautiful people. He's there, you know, like, and there's not, I've met a lot of celebrities and a lot of them are freaking dicks. You know, they're like so disappointing. Like I looked up to them, or I thought, and then you meet them and you're just like, man, you believe your own hype. You like, you act like he was just like, text me, hey Chris, you want my guitar? Would that help out? Like just a yeah. nice guy, you know? And so I'm so grateful to him. And we have another mutual, D. Schneider, you know, another one that's just, you know, from Long Island, known him for years. He was a big proponent of mine in the 90s, trying to get my song in his movie Strangeland at the time, set up meetings for me because he believed in me. And to this day, man, like, we're just like great friends. I'd do anything in the world for him. Wonderful human being. And so I don't know. I'm just really fortunate. You know, I'm in a place in my life right now where, you know, I have the show here. I've been doing it for 8 years. I have two more years to go. But you know, it's just a really great place in my life. And I think my real calling, because I was blessed with so much success, is to meet people like yourself and to try to do things to help children, to be a voice for the greater good, not for myself, but for these kids that suffer with life and death every moment of every day. And I think that's why, you know, this love that I have for these kids have brought me to people like Paul Stanley, who's a hero of mine, or to Chris Jericho, or to Dee Schneider, or, you know, to Gary Oldman, who's just the most amazing human being. Besides, you know, a thespian of thespians, he's incredible, you know, so I'm just so thankful.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
You know what I like talking to you is that when I was walking down here, you have all these amazing motorcycles in your lobby, and you've got all these pictures of all the people that have kind of come see you. You're still a fan as well.
Absolutely.
Is it cool for you to be in Vegas and have, like you said, like Paul Stanley and Dee Snider? It's like almost like the rock star of magicians and illusionists. Has there been some people that have come to see your show that have just blown your mind even more so than the guys we've talked about already?
You know, one of the things that I say on stage some nights is that, you know, I was a big Michael Jackson fan, a huge Michael Jackson fan. And I found out because Paris, his daughter, came to see my show. Mm-hmm. And she was blown away, and she came backstage and she was like, you know, my father was such a big fan. We would watch a show together.
Wow.
And like religiously. And, you know, when I was a kid, I used to wear your shirts. And like I saw pictures of her like wearing my shirts. And she's like, you know, my dad loved your stuff. He snuck in and saw your show. And then she came and she appeared on my television special, Tricked Up. And I did something that I dedicated to her father and her. And it was something that I knew her dad would have loved, something I've been working on for over 15 years, which is this crazy levitation. And after she saw it, she said, if my dad were alive, he would have stole that.
Wow.
And I would have given it to the guy, because he reached out to us because he wanted me to work on some material for his London tour, but I never got the opportunity.
For the last one that he was going to do.
Never, I got the opportunity to meet him. And, you know, that's the person that I would have lost my mind to meet, because I don't know. I just was a big Michael Jackson fan and what he accomplished. And he was, you know, really just, you know, he just filled a stage by standing on it with nothing.
Well, he understood the concept of the illusion too. I'm sure you heard about the little pegs that he invented to put the shoes in to do the smooth criminal bend forward.
He didn't actually invent that.
Okay.
That's based off of an old illusion. But
nice.
What he did do is he was the first to bring that in a commercial way to the public, like Madonna did with voguing. Mm-hmm. Voguing was in like New York City clubs all the time, and Madonna saw it and it knew how to commercialize it. So she packaged it in a way where it looked like she brought it, you know, she invented this. But at the time, you know, it wasn't something that, you know, it's really, there's not a lot of things to invent in the world. It's all there's some interpretation of something,
like else, though,
you know, but Michael was somebody that was the first in a lot of ways. And I have nothing but the greatest respect for him and what he's accomplished. And Paris is, you know, just an extension of him. And she's amazing on my show. And she's a friend of mine. And I'm very honored to know the family.
I was going to ask you before, when you're talking about doing kind of like the submerging in water, we're pretty much the same age. I'm a few years younger, but we come from the same generation. I'll never forget Happy Days when Fonzie has to do the milk can trick.
James Randi.
Because James Amazing Randi gets you drunk.
Yeah.
Did that inspire you when you were a kid?
Well, yeah. Anything magic. I loved, you know, I love Doug Henning. I love Doug Henning, you know, and very underrated magician.
I agree, yeah.
And a guy that really was a product of the times. If there was no Doug Henning, it would never be a David Copperfield.
Really?
Yeah. Doug Henning really was responsible for the resurgence of magic back then. I mean, he was the guy that came out, was a product of the times, and magic wasn't popular. You know, he came out and made it popular. He had the longest Broadway show at the time. He broke really all sorts of records and all sorts of barriers. I mean, he was on Johnny Carson. He was the guy. And then, you know, David Copperfield, essentially the producers kind of stole the whole idea of Spellbound, which was Doug Henning's show, or the magic show. And then they did a show called The Magic Man after the success of Doug Henning to try to kind of play off of the success of Doug Henning. And they did the show, which, you know, which was kind of that. So, like, really, Doug Henning opened up the gates for everybody to come through. And that really is the truth. I mean, Doug Henning left magic because he really believed in the, you know, transcendental meditation, and went to the Maharishi and, you know, kind of dedicated his life, you know, for practicing that. And that really perpetuated some of the magicians that were around then, because Doug Henning was the guy. He was the number one guy out there. No one could touch him. So
he ran for Prime Minister of Canada in 1992. And I remember hearing, he goes, if I can make an elephant disappear, I can make the deficit disappear. And I voted for him. I'm voting for Doug Henning for Prime Minister. But yeah, like you said, a very underrated guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, Amazing Randi.
Yeah, Amazing Randi, you know, has been such a proponent of, you know, like these people that claim they can talk to the dead, mediums and psychics. Mm-hmm. You know, he kind of took over where Houdini left off and put his money where his mouth was with the foundation, and you know, went out there and, you know, kind of put people through the test. You know, you say you have these abilities,
right?
Well, let's put you through the test. I have $1 million on the line. And I, a couple of times, you know, with this clown in Long Island psychic.
So, you know, he put $1 million of his own money.
Well,
down.
It was a foundation.
If you can prove that,
yeah,
you can talk to.
And then I threw another $1 million of my own money into it. And I basically, you know, challenged the Long Island psychic, you know, who's just basically doing, you know, kind of very.
Switch.
Yeah. Well, she's using techniques that are, you know, very kind of like the beginning stages of like, you know, mentalism or cold reading.
As an illusionist, you can see this right away.
Oh, it's comical. You know, John Edwards is a joke. You know, one of my best friends is a guy named Banachek. He's the world's greatest mentalist. And this guy's written 7 books on the subject. He's probably more respected in mentalism than any person living today. He actually works with James Randi and the foundation, and he helps set the test conditions. And he's my friend for many years. He's a producer on my show. And, you know, people want to believe, especially, you know, I don't have a problem with people do it as entertainment, but when you sit there and you lose your loved one, a child or whoever it is, and you're so desperate because you had such a connection with love with this person, and this person is like, well, I can communicate with them, give me some money. Mm-hmm. And they're just giving you this false sense of hope when it's in reality just taking advantage of the vulnerable. And that's, it doesn't get much worse than that. So that challenge still remains $2 million for you to take this little test, just to expose that you're just a fraud like everybody else. John Edwards, Sylvia Brown died, so she can't do it. and Long Island psychic. I'm embarrassed because she's from Long Island. I'm from Long Island. You
so
know?
Am I. I'm from Long Island.
Yeah, yeah. So,
Manhasset.
Yeah, it's East Meadow. We like to think of it as Strong Island Flavor Flav and myself. You know?
Yeah, boy. Yeah. So what do you consider yourself, Chris? Are you an illusionist, a magician, a combination?
I'm an artist. I'm an artist that utilizes different aspects of art to connect to people. Like, you'll see people crying during my show. Magic has never had that effect on people, because what I try to produce with art and through art is the magic of emotion. It's connecting to people and giving them a feeling and allowing them to be moved, not because of how something works, but by how it makes them feel when they watch it. And magic hasn't done that. You know, you'll see multiple standing ovations tonight. You won't see that in any Las Vegas show. And that's because people want to escape, but they also want to connect to something. Mm-hmm. And this show, there's a lot to connect to. It's an emotional roller coaster. And I'm 1 minute, I'm one way. The next minute, I'm completely antithesis. And so it's really, you know, this crazy ride. And at the end of the show, you feel empowered. You feel like you can go out and conquer the world. I want to leave people with hope. I want to leave people in a sense of positivity, because we live in a very negative world sometimes. I mean, if you look around the world, you look at the internet, people hide behind a keyboard. They spew hatred to other people, and you know, it's really unfortunate that it has to be like that. You know, we need more love in the world. We need to inspire people. We need to move people. We need to have a reality check, you know. So we're all the same, man. We bleed the same color of blood. Doesn't matter if you're black, white, brown, or green. So we need to stand together and fight, you know, with love, hatred. We need to fight violence. We need to fight the evil that manifests itself in the world, you know? And that's something I believe is bipartisan. I think we can all agree on that. But yet, it seems like the world is very negative sometimes.
It's a very KISS attitude when I say that, because it's funny, because for myself, KISS's attitude, the band, was always believe in yourself. Don't listen to people that can't tell you can't do something. Yeah. And I've built my entire career and life upon that. Being a huge KISS fan when I was a kid, you seem to have the same KISS affiliation.
Absolutely, yep.
And KISS was always about believing in yourself and making it happen. And it's just, you're another example of that.
Yeah, and you know what, I remember, you know, listening to KISS music, and and it would be a day where there would be steam coming out of the sewer, you know, and I pretended that was fog, and I was playing the guitar, and I was Paul Stanley. So like, you know, I was definitely inspired by KISS in the day, their theatrics, you know, what they brought to the stage, and it was something that was really unique and different and original, and that's really what I wanted to do. You know, like, if you look at Ace Frehley's outfit, that's really derived from the Kabuki Theater. Mm-hmm. You know,
sure it is.
So, and Bill O'Coin, I've known Bill O'Coin for many years.
No
he
kidding.
Unfortunately passed away years back, but he was somebody that was a big proponent of mine too.
Did he give you advice?
Yes, he gave me the greatest advice, and I have a picture in my house of this moment. I got done doing a showcase in California, and I was very depressed. I was sitting against big dumpster, and I had tears in my eyes. And Bill O'Coin came over to me, and he said to me, "Chris, what's upset?" I said, "You know, I don't know if this is gonna work out. I put all my eggs in one basket." He's like, "Chris, you gotta do this. This is the best time of your life." And I was like, "What do you mean it's the best time of my life?" He's like, "It is. The journey is far greater than the destination." And that's really true. Because the journey, you know, you never know what's gonna happen. It's exciting, but once you get there, it's even more difficult to remain there. You know, I work harder now than I ever worked in my life to remain number one in the world of what my field is. And I literally work 18, 20 hours a day, 7 days a week. Like, I'm doing my live show. I have a touring show. I have a TV show. I have many projects going on at one time. And it's insane. If I think back to think about how I used to work and how I work now, it's two completely different people. So, you know, I really understood what he meant by those words. Now, I didn't understand it when he said it to me, though.
Yeah, once you get to the top of the mountain, it's harder to stay on there because everyone wants to knock you off.
Yeah, you have a big target on your head. You know, so you have people that will resort to buying Twitter followers, like the guy next door, to try to, like, you know, he'll resort to calling up people in the press and trying to get them to retract quotes about me. He'll, you know, it's unbelievable how insecure entertainers are, because all they have in their life is their work. And they don't even enjoy it. They just do it because of their ego. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when you have love in your life, everything else is put in perspective.
Supersedes all of it.
Yeah.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Talk is Jericho.
You mentioned before when we mentioned the 24-hour water gag, how you've done a lot of crazier things. Tell me some of the other crazy things you've done that are worse than that.
Well, a lot of people talk about the fish hooks. So in the WWE, I also did another demonstration on Broadway and 43rd, and that was to hang for a world record, which is about 6 hours, with six fish hooks in my body. And I hung through my flesh by these hooks, spinning around. In the middle of the daytime, people were like in a puke, and it was really disgusting. But it got people's attention, and I went into the, I think it's the Ripley's Believe It or Not or Guinness Book of World, one of those things for the longest
hanging.
And then I took it even to another level on my TV show Mind Freak. I think in season two, I hung by four fish hooks, only four through just my back, and I hung from a helicopter, and I was up about 1,000 feet. And one of the things that I didn't take into consideration, and I didn't have any painkillers, nothing to numb my skin. It was just pure mind over matter. And eventually the pain, you become numb to the pain because you just become used to it, you know? But I hung from a helicopter, and as I'm on the helicopter, there's another helicopter that's shooting the whole thing, and I didn't take into consideration all the downdraft from the other helicopter, which had a tremendous amount of turbulence. So my skin was stretching and ripping, and I was up there for 30 minutes. At first, I couldn't do it. I almost puked. But I had to go up there because as an executive producer, I had no show and I'm responsible for the money. So I had to do it. That was pretty crazy.
But Chris, how do you hook the, like, I'm thinking Jim Rose sideshow, yeah, where they would just put the hook in there. Is there a certain point of your skin where there's no nerves?
Is this acupuncture? No. These are huge gauge hooks that go through your flesh. And I had a guy that does a lot of body suspensions do it for me. Alan, actually, from Texas.
Shout out to Alan.
Yeah. And he understands how deep to put them in, because if you put them in too deep, you'll hit the muscle, you can do permanent damage. If you put it in too shallow, rip your skin, right, it'll go right through your skin,
and you're 100 feet or whatever, 1,000 feet,
at least 1,000 feet,
you're done.
Yeah, you can look that up. It's a nutty demonstration. So that was pretty intense. Lighting myself on fire for my mom's birthday, 70th birthday, was pretty crazy because of how I lit myself on fire and had to put an illusion. Well, I was 13, 14 feet in a blaze. It wasn't like this little blaze that you see in a movie, like running down. I was walking, and I burned my. That's where that burn.
You can see the burn there, yeah.
I have a burn on my leg. That was pretty nutty. Walking down the Planet Hollywood, which was at the time called the Aladdin, I floated 500 feet above the Luxor in the light. I walked up the Luxor. I mean, all these things you can't try. You just, you know, you hope it's going to work, because literally you're taking your life and you're taking your hands, because you don't know. Like, and you have to do it. Surrounded, you know, people can take video pictures 360 degrees above, below. So, you know, you don't know if you're going to be exposed because somebody sees something they shouldn't see. And you don't know if this thing's going to work where you just, you know, fall to your death. So very, very scary stuff. I mean, I've been run over by a steamroller, you know, which is an illusion. But what happens if that illusion doesn't work and that thing just crushes me?
Well, sure.
You know?
This is not even close to this, but one time we had a thing where I was with Mike Tyson in the WWE, and we were tag team partners. Long story short, he turns on me, punches me in the face. Now, of course, he's punching me and he's not hitting me, but I'm like, what if he does? This is Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
And this is Chris Jericho. If he hits me, he's going to knock my fucking head off.
Right.
I have to completely trust the magic of this illusion.
Right.
How do you do that?
Here's what I just did with Mike Tyson, who Tyson's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
So I asked Mike when he was here for my charity, I said, Mike, punch me in the stomach. Give me your best shot in the stomach, because I wanted to videotape it for my show. He wouldn't do it. I had Chuck Liddell punch me in the stomach. I had Frank Mir, you know, who's
some heavy hitters.
Yeah, Frank Mir punched me in the stomach. I had Randy Couture punch me in the stomach, and I had Paige Van Zandt punch me in the stomach from the UFC.
Yeah,
but Mike wouldn't do it. So you know, I didn't know what to expect, but you know, if he did do it, you know, I was definitely. But it's a mental thing, and obviously it's a physical thing. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to be punched in the face by
saying.
Mike Tyson.
So, but you have to trust that the illusion.
That's not an illusion. That's me just being stupid. See, Houdini died. That's how he died. So he said he could take any man's punch, right? So he would prepare himself. He would get the punch. But one day he did a show, and it was a couple college kids afterwards, and they're like, you know, Mr. Houdini, is it true that you can take any man's punch? And he's like, yes. And the guy just belted him, and Houdini wasn't physically prepared at all, and it ruptured his appendix, and appendicitis set in, and he died in 1926 on Halloween because he was too proud to go to the hospital.
Wow.
That's how he died. He didn't die from the water torture tank. He died because he got punched in the stomach. So I wanted a show because Houdini, who was great for his day and age, to take nothing away from him, he's still synonymous with magic, you know, more than 80 years after his death. I wanted to show people that, you know, in the day and age that Houdini, you know, people didn't throw punches like they do today, you know. They weren't the heavyweight champion of the UFC or a Hall of Famer or whatever it is. So I did this on my Mind Freak show. I used a Muay Thai fighter, but now that people know who I am, I can get, you know, the Hall of Famers, the world champions at their sport. And so, you know, I got three guys to give me their best shot. You know, but I couldn't get Mike to do it. Maybe he likes me too much because we used to hang out all the time in clubs. That was a scene, man. He would have my ass all the time. You want to hear a great Chuck Liddell story?
Please.
All right, Chuck Liddell's a friend of mine. So I'm hanging out one time in a club. It was a club called XS. And I'm there, and I'm sitting there, and I'm chatting in this like little VIP area by the DJ booth. And this guy comes over, and he's walking past me. He just hits me. Like, not punch me, but this body checks me. Yeah, for no reason. And I turn around and he's like, you know, a little shorter than me, but, you know, has 100 pounds on me, you know, just this big guy.
Cigarette machine with a head on it.
Yeah. And I'm like, dude. And I'm like, you know, and he's like, what are you going to do about it? And I'm like, stupid. Like,
you're New Yorker.
I'm stupid. Like, you know, like, I know a couple of things here and there, but, you know, like, whatever. And it doesn't really matter how big somebody is. But then his friend comes over, and his friend is probably 275, 270, big dude, like this black guy, like a mountain, like just, and he goes, what are you going to do about it, white boy? What he says to me.
Right.
And I'm just like, you know, just an apology is fine. Next thing you know, I feel a tap on my shoulder. He's like, Chris, is there a problem? Guess who it is? Chuck Liddell. Now, the big guy doesn't know who Chuck Liddell is for a moment. He doesn't recognize him. And he's like, is there a problem here? You know? And the guy's like talking back to Chuck. And then some other guy runs over to this big guy, who's 270 or whatever. And he's like, you don't want to mess with this guy. And he put his hand out, shook hands, and left peacefully. It was a scene out of a freaking movie. And Chuck, to this day, won't let me live that down. So I owe Chuck Liddell so, like, whatever he wants. Like, so, but that was an amazing, amazing moment because I would have been in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, for sure.
A lot of trouble.
When you mention Houdini, is that kind of one of your inspirations?
Yeah,
sure. Who's the best magicians, illusionists of all time besides, I mean, obviously,
well, I mean,
your generation?
It's kind of hard to say who's the best because, you know, like, I'm a general practitioner. Like, I don't practice just one thing. I know a little bit. Yeah, kind of, you know, that's what you have to be today. You know, you have to know a little bit about everything. But Houdini, you know, you have to give him props. I mean, was he a great magician? No, but he was great, a great escape artist. He was a provocateur. He knew how to push people's buttons, how to get people to talk about him, how to sell out his shows if they weren't selling out, how to utilize psychology and marketing and really you know, still to this day be synonymous with magic. So you got to respect that. There are some amazing magicians in the world today that can do things with a deck of cards that will just make your mouth drop. Most, unfortunately, are very boring, though. You see, they don't know how to package it in a way that's pop culture, that's engaging. And that's really where I came in.
That's what you do, yeah.
Well, that's where I really came in, is I said, you know what? I want to help these magicians out because I've been so blessed with success. So I created a show called The Supernaturalist, which features 9 unbelievable magicians that I handpicked from all over the world. You'll see the best card manipulator. I created an act from Stefan that people literally stand up in the middle of his act to applaud. You'll see just the most unusual acts, most unusual abilities. And, you know, these people, now I'm trying to package them to give them the opportunity that I never had, because it took me 18 years to become an overnight success.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's true.
Exactly. Let me ask you this. With all the crazy stuff you've done, you mentioned being set on fire. You mentioned walking up the side of the Luxor, which, by the way, people don't know, it's a pyramid.
Yeah.
First of all, how did you – I mean, I can't – you're not allowed to say how you do it. But what is your mindset? Do you have suction on your shoes, or is it with a rope? Or
well, you can watch The Illusion. You'll see me tonight levitating, flipping, and floating all over the stage. You won't understand how I do it, I hope. No one does. Magicians don't even know how I do these things, because I've been working on these things for like 15 years. I've employed NASA's vendors to help me with some of this stuff. And you won't see these illusions in any other show, not only in Vegas, but the world. I mean, if you go see a show like Across the Street or The Two Guys Down the Block, you'll see that their shows are like dinosaurs. They're so old school. Yeah, like it's old school, which is great. There's a place for it in the world, and that's good. But you come see my show, you'll see things that you've never seen in your life. It's because I've worked for like 15, 20 years with the most incredible team in my 60,000 square foot laboratory to bring these things to life. And people go crazy. You know, we'll get 7, 8 standing ovations in a show. So for me, I hope you don't understand how these things work, and that it kind of spawns the child that lives in all of us to wonder, like, how does he do it, and how it makes you feel when you watch it. That's what my goal is as an artist. It really is not important how I do it. I can just say this: when I'm doing these things, whether it's walking up the Luxor, floating over it, or doing my show every night, I take big chances with my life. Every single performance, I could kill myself in the 7 o'clock show that you're going to see tonight in many different ways. And once you see it, you'll understand why.
You know, it's interesting because you're talking about for similarities between what you do and what we do wrestling wise.
Sure.
It's the same thing. It's a little bit of an illusion. Obviously, the door has been pulled open a little bit more in wrestling, but I'll never tell the tricks. Right. People know them fine, but how do you do this? I'll never say, was that real? Oh, yeah, it was real.
Right.
Did that hurt? Yeah, it fucking hurt. But the thing is, though, yes or no, whatever, you could get legitimately hurt, killed, you know.
Oh, well, many people that have, have gotten, you've probably gotten seriously injured, I'm sure, in your career.
Have you ever been injured?
Oh, yeah. I've tore my bicep off of my bone. I have 2 complete tears in my rotator cuff, which I had to have a 4-hour surgery. They thought I wouldn't be able to raise my hand over my...
How did that happen in a certain...
In doing the straitjacket in Times Square in front of like 20,000 people and from my show.
What was the gag?
I was in the first person to ever be in two. I was in a straitjacket, like not a bullshit straitjacket like you buy at a magic, like a real straitjacket from the Posey Company, which supplies mental institution hospitals. I was in one, and then they had a transport jacket over me, so I had 2 jackets on, which had never been done, 2 jackets. And I had 50 pounds of weight because I'm totally into mixed martial arts. And I thought, like, it should be instead of a race against the clock, like this fake clock that says you have a countdown. It's bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like, I want a real race. So I wanted to have a noose around my neck with 50 pounds of weight, that the more I move, the tighter it would go. And it would, you know, eventually, you know, make me unconscious. So I would have to get out before I went on. Yeah, choke me out. So I had to get out before I went unconscious. So I went to Randy Couture. I went to his gym, showed him what I wanted to do. We worked on it. He choked me out. I wanted to see what that felt like, so I know the telltale signs of everything closing in. It's like a tunnel, all that stuff. And then I went to New York City and I did it. I was successful, but in the process, I completely tore my bicep off of my bone. I tore my right shoulder in 2 different places completely. And I still have a tear in my left shoulder, which I have to have surgery on, but I can't. I have 2 more years left in my contract, so I have to wait.
How many shows a week?
I do 450 shows a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dude, that's insane.
I do 2 tonight, yeah.
Is there ever a time, like, do you have a safe word where if something goes completely wrong and like, you can't get out, do you say, like, you know, Barbados, and your boy comes and pulls you out of water?
Well, in the live show, no, I don't. I'm kind of at my own.
Live without a net.
Yeah, live without a net. When I'm doing things, you know, like on television, like in Mind Freak, you know, the problem is, even with me giving a, like, tapping my head, which would mean like I'm in trouble, you know, when you're under, you know, cement, or, you know, a guy died with being buried alive, and I saw him die on this news thing, Joe Burris, and I was like, I want to do that. I want to be the first person to do that, because Houdini would never bury himself alive. He said the weight of the earth was too great. And then I did it. I was the first person not only to do it in cement, which is pretty freaking
buried nuts. Yourself alive in cement?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Does it solidify instantly?
No, we made sure it didn't. But it's the weight of the cement, which
you
try.
How much time do you have?
Not much, because I had to try to. I mean, if you ever get buried just on the beach, you know, into some sand, you'll see how hard it is to move the earth. It's very difficult. But if people had the opportunity to watch Tricked Up on A&E, then they would see that, you know, for me, it's not about living or dying. It's about doing these crazy demonstrations. I do over 30 different demonstrations in like an hour. And I'm doing it to like different celebrities, from Gary Oldman to Andrew Dice Clay to, you know, Chuck Liddell to Frank Mir, Paige Van Zandt, Miles Brown. I'm doing these crazy things, but it's like at a rapid pace. It's no bullshit. It's just like crazy stuff just crazy things. I rip somebody's body in half. I levitate for Paris Jackson like a maniac throughout the whole casino. You see me get the punches from all these guys. You see, I just do crazy. I go into like a right. It's kind of like, you know, like Jackass for magic.
Right,
obnoxiously delicious show.
Getting down to the last few questions, man. First of all, I would never want to get in a fight with you.
I think you do just fine. You do just fine.
Last few things. You mentioned one thing that I just have to ask you about. You said you have the 60, I could be wrong, the 60 square foot, the laboratory.
60,000 square foot.
60,000 square foot laboratory.
Yeah, it's big.
What is that? Is that where you come with your tricks?
Well, I'm going to take you there one time. Okay. I'll give you a tour. But basically, it's two buildings, and one building is totally dedicated to creation. So it's like, you know, I have an idea. It needs to be fabricated. So we have CMC machines I own. We have, you know, full – I have – you know, with this show and over there, probably 150 people that work for me, you know.
I saw the pictures on their wall, yeah.
Yeah, I have lots of people. That's just for here. But then I have my TV show. Then I have my studio. And so I employ, you know, a lot of people. So over there, it's fabrication. I have a staging area. Once something's built, I can practice it. I can put together shows. I could direct shows there. So I have a big space. I have a storage area. I have a think tank area. I have a costume shop there. I have a prop shop there. I have sculpt. We can sculpt anything we want there. Then I have in the other building, a television studio, huge 60-foot green screen. I have different sets that are there or that can be built. I have a merchandise area, graphics department, complete full television facility
shop.
With Avids and 3D animation, own all my own cameras, all my jib arms, steady cams, drones. You know, I've spent a lot of money to have the infrastructure to kind of do whatever it is I want to do. So when D said I could use the song for the kids, I want to do this in the desert. So I just brought my crew, and in 3 hours I shot that music video. He had no idea what I was going to do.
Check it on YouTube. It's kind of a very powerful ballad version.
Six million views.
It's great. It's very, very cool.
Yeah, D did a great job.
Is there a trick that you're working on that you haven't been able to figure out yet?
One of the ones that was really, really difficult and took me probably the most amount of time is the levitation you're going to see in tonight's show. This has never been done in the history of magic. There's a lot of things. My cutting in half has never been done. There are so many different illusions in this show that have never been done. Like, if you go see another show, you'll see them like wheel out this box with shove a girl in there with leotard. I mean, that's kind of the old school way of doing
two
it.
Two girls will be in there or something.
Yeah, there's some like that. To me, that's cheesy. I always thought that was cheesy. For me, magic has to look like a movie. You have to create movement magic, but you have to give it an emotion and a connection that goes beyond the enigma of the thing, but really connects to people on some visceral, mm-hmm. visceral level, you know? So I think what you see in the show tonight and how I package it with, you know, 9 different screens, all original video content, which I shot in my studio, which I directed in my studio, and we edited in my studio. There's 3D immersion in the show. So basically, you know, you'll see me on stage in the middle of 3D without putting glasses on. You'll see crazy demonstrations. You'll laugh. You'll think it's sexy. You'll think it's scary. It's trippy, and it has heart. You know, it's really. I'm very proud of the show. We have lasers in the show. We have over 1,000 lights. The latest, greatest lights. The greatest, latest, greatest technologies that are in the show. More than any other show in Las Vegas, we have the latest, greatest stuff. And that's really because I'm a spokesperson for like Barco, which is like the greatest LED wall projection units in the world, and I've been able to convince them that that I am going to create something for them that they're going to be very proud of, and I did, and now they have all their customers coming to see how I utilize their product because it's very different, lasers and pyrotechnics, and it's a very, very cool show, and I'm really, you know, just honored to do what I love here at the Luxor. Cirque du Soleil has been amazing and given me this opportunity, and you know, I do it 10 times a week. So sometimes it's a little challenging, you know.
What's your favorite illusion that you do?
It's they're all my children, yeah, you know. And I do over, I think about almost 50 different things in the show. Like a lot of magic. Like if you go see another magic show, there's like 15 things. Mm-hmm. Here I just want to like have it be a freight train. I just want it to be exciting. I don't want people to be bored. I don't want people to like look at their clock or like have time to talk to somebody. Sure. So I just put a shitload of magic that I love as a fan of magic, you know, and it's always different. So it's hard to pick one over the other, but I could just say that the levitation is pretty spectacular. I've had many very credible magicians in this show, including Lance Burton, who's, you know, a friend of mine who's been doing, he did, I don't know, 16,000 shows in Vegas. And he does not understand how I do it. And he doesn't want to know. That's the beauty of it.
He doesn't say, like, come on, tell me.
Nah, he doesn't want to know. Like, he loves that he can be fooled because it's so hard to be fooled, you know, when you've been doing this for so long since you're a kid. You see something in 2 seconds, you know. It'd be like somebody doing a move in the ring, right? And then they do something like, wait a second, normally they would do that to break the fall, but they didn't do that. So what the hell broke their fall?
I want to know.
Yeah, you know, right? Yeah, So that's kind of the thing. But, I mean, magicians, I don't think, and I don't say this conceited, I say this with confidence because I put the sweat equity in the years with my incredible team to do this. There'll be no magic show that will touch this show for at least 20, 25 years.
Wow.
Technologically.
So the technology can catch up.
Yeah, because, I mean, we're using technology in a show that you can't even get right now. It's just because of my relationship with the companies. But yeah, it's pretty... The planets had to align perfectly for me to do this because, like, you know, like the people I have working for me are specialists in certain areas that I just happen to need for it. It's just crazy.
Very much like, happenstance.
It was supposed to happen.
Yeah. Last question. What's your favorite Kiss album?
You know, the one when I was a kid that I kept on looking at was, you know, the first Kiss Alive, you know, because of that picture.
Yeah.
You know, in the smoke. Well, it was actually the back cover. On the back cover, right, there was a picture of, I remember there was the candles and he had all the smoke and the mushrooms.
Yeah.
And you know, it was just this energetic picture that, for a kid that was, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old, was like, wow, you know?
It was beyond.
Yeah, and then you know, Kiss Alive 2 came out, and then you opened it up, and then you had them. Now they made money. Now you have them on the big risers that are, like, hydraulic.
The and real then
you
orange
have,
flame.
Yeah, you have all that stuff. But, you know, I don't know. There's it's weird because for me, you know, music can bring you back so quickly.
It's a time machine.
It really is a time machine. And, you know, you can appreciate a song completely differently than somebody else because of what it meant to you at that time, where you were, who you were with. A lot of these people are no longer on this earth. So, you know, the song holds a special place in your heart. So, but yeah, I mean, Kiss... Paul Stanley, man. You're the man.
Me too. I feel the same way.
I can't wait to have him come to Vegas and spend come see the show or get to spend some time with him. I so look forward. Paul, if you're listening to this, come see me.
Dude, thank you so much, Chris. I'm going
to
send you.
I just want to say something real quick, to say thank you for coming to Vegas, for spending time with me and allowing me to be your guest. It's an honor and a privilege to know you. You're such a good guy. When we chatted, I just want people to know, like, your heart is amazing. Right away, you wanted to contribute and help with the charity for these children. And that really means a lot to me, because a lot of people say things, but they don't follow through. Mm-hmm. You were on it. You shot a video. You're right there. And I just want to say from my heart, you're a wonderful human being. I thank you. And it's an honor to know you.
Well, like I said, dude, it's been 17 years, and I felt bad for eating pizza in front of you when you were submersed in the water for 24
hours. Next time
you
have pizza, we'll have it together. Thank you so much, Chris. God bless you.
God bless you too, man.
Accused of a crime, but nobody believes you? Is Joe Law breathing down your neck? My name's Chris Hand, attorney at law. And with my brother, Corey, who's also an attorney, we're two hands that will get you off. Are you a nerd who tricked a jock's girlfriend into having sex with you by wearing a mask? We'll get you off. Or maybe you're a scientist accused of tricking Libyans into giving you radioactive material. We'll get you off. Or maybe you were a lady that thought you were having sex with a consenting adult who turned out to be a 13-year-old made big by a Zoltar machine. We've seen it 1,000 times. We'll get you off. No case is too hard, and we can't wait to show you our briefs. We're the lawyers they'll never see coming when we force our way into every single one of their chambers and plead your case straight on their face. To find out how we can represent you, listen to the Team Tiger Awesome show every Sunday right here on the Jericho Network and Podcast One.
Team Tiger Awesome does those hilarious fake ads in their episodes, all of them. If you want more of them, then hit that subscribe button on iTunes. And while you're there, leave them a rating and a review as well. In fact, leave all the Jericho Network podcast ratings and reviews on iTunes. I can't tell you how much that helps us out. We love the feedback on the episodes. Also helps us with advertisers, so we can keep giving you all this great content for free every week, twice a week. Content like Chris Angel. What a great guy he is, man. You can tell he's legitimately a nice dude. And I actually did eat a piece of pizza in front of him while he was suspended in a tank of water for 24 hours. Yeah. What a good friend I was. Good move, Jericho, you stupid idiot. But we love doing it for you twice a week, but we need your help. Hit up iTunes, subscribe, leave your reviews. We want to get those numbers up on the reviews for all the shows and all the shows on the Jericho Network, including Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus, the flagship show Keeping It 100 with Conan, our latest huge smash hit, The Raven Effect. It's completely insane. Go check it out. And, of course, the creepy, freaky, terrifying Beyond the Darkness, which brings paranormal tales to you 5 days a week on the Jericho Network. And also, just a reminder, Talk is Jericho participates in the Amazon Associates program, man, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for me to earn the fees by linking to Amazon.com and affiliated sites. You can link to Amazon at PodcastOne.com by clicking on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page. Help us out, man. You can also find all my great sponsors there as well, including DDPYoga.com/Jericho, 30% off the DDP Yoga app and all DDPY merch. Blue Apron. Go to blueapron.com/Jericho. Get your first 3 meals for free with free shipping. And go to BetDSI. Register at BetDSI.com. Use the promo code Jericho25. That's my last name, man. And the number 25 to get $25 for free. That's $25 they're going to give to you to use at BetDSI.com. Plus a 200% bonus on your first deposit. Go check it out. That's the way it goes. Thank you so much for checking on all my sponsors. Thanks for listening today and every day. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next and coming up on Friday. You've been waiting 1 year and 2 days, because this is wrestling and we screwed up our timing. 1 year and 2 days for the biggest podcast ever, man. We've been talking about this for 1 year and 2 days, and it's finally here. The wait is over. Mick Foley makes his Talk is Jericho debut, and he is tremendous, a great storyteller. What a cool cat. You are going to love it. So we'll see you on Friday. In the meantime, and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.